This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum and ThisPipeLife.com. We thank them for their support of this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD.
Hey, Bo. Good evening, man.
Man, good evening to you, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, we're recording a day early, as our loyal live listeners know. We normally record on Monday, but you've got somewhere to be, I think, tomorrow. And so we're doing a day early, which happens to be Easter. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we're actually doing it. We'll just pull the curtain completely back. We're actually doing it since it was kind of not necessarily last minute, but since it kind of fell in kind of an off date. We're actually doing it here at Podastery Studios. So,
That's right.
You know, you're looking in for those of us joining us on the live show, rather than seeing the beauty and the legacy,
elegance and charm,
exactly,
of ye old pipe shop.
Yeah, instead you get ye newish
recording studio,
podcast studio. Yeah,
and with these beautiful burlap coffee bags,
exactly,
that I'm assuming are up on the wall to help with the sound. Is that right?
Yeah, they're here to help with the sound. But I like to feel as though the caffeine that is in those bags is seeping through the air and into us, even as we speak. That's the goal.
I think it kind of goes the other way. I don't think Bo gets like caffeinated. I think the caffeine gets bo-inated.
All right.
I think it happens the other way.
I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
Dude, happy Easter to you. I've got to tell a quick story.
Yeah, please do.
You know, it's funny, something that happened in church recently. And, you know, occasionally Bo and I bring this kind of stuff up. But anyway, I was at worship, and this guy who I recognized as a regular at the shop, or a semi-regular person at the shop, was there. And he didn't see me, but I saw him. And, you know, I go to this little Anglican church. He went up front. He was, you know, taking communion. And then he came back and then sat down after the service. I wanted to make sure, I'd just say hey to him. You've got this guy. He was talking to, like, our priest, Father Keith, the rector at our church.
Shout out to Father Keith.
You know, and a bunch of other church, you know, folks. He was just kind of getting to know folks. And he was a visitor of church, you know, that kind of thing. And so just wanted to talk to folks. And, you know, people were kind to him and welcoming him and all that. And I tapped him on the shoulder. He turned around, and Bo, the look of abject horror in his face when he saw his drug dealer at the church with him.
Oh, man.
It was so funny. He was like, "Man, don't tell anyone that I smoked this pipe." And I was like, "Yeah," I was like, "Man, brother, trust me. Like." Both the priests here are my customers.
Right.
it was really funny. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's just, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you're in our goofy little world. So it was pretty great.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's been a fun day, Easter holiday for us. We've got my two children are now old enough that they can both participate in Easter egg hunts.
Oh yeah.
And so it was a lot of fun. We had two hunts of the day.
Okay.
One was at my parents' house, the other was at the house. We actually had my in-laws on an iPad as we were kind of taking them around, you know, so they could watch the festivities.
Easter egg hunting in the 21st century.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
But it was a lot of fun, and just an absolutely beautiful day to do it. You know, I was thinking very specifically as we were sitting around the table and everybody was kind of, you know, they're sharing Bible verses. And then also those of us that had participated in Lent were also sharing kind of some of our struggles in doing so this
year. Kind
of
talk about your experience a little bit.
Yeah, I think I confessed this on the show, and if not, I'm doing it now. I bombed out midway through, man. I tried too hard, and I failed so bad. And
well,
so,
yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you gave it the old college try, and hopefully as you struggled occasionally, you thought of good things. But
yeah, that definitely.
But then you just chose to, you know, die. What was your poison of choice that you gave up this go around?
Well, bread, beer, pasta, like that's the thing.
Like I went, carbs.
Yeah, all,
yeah,
pretty
dude,
much all,
you know,
carbs.
You got to pick one of those.
Yeah,
any
was,
one of those
it was
would
a
be
mistake.
Really difficult. So.
It was a mistake. but one way or the other, man, it really was a beautiful Easter.
And, yeah, it really was, man. I was quite moved today. It was very, very good.
Well, so let me ask you this though: after the feasting and everything else,
that's
and,
right,
and hunts and such, did you indulge? Did you enjoy your pipe?
I didn't today, actually. I
seersucker suit on, not smoking some seersucker.
I did not today, actually. Right after worship, and then gorging myself at my cousin's house, I took a 2-hour nap. and it was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So Sunday naps are kind of a thing for me, and I probably will smoke a pipe tonight on the porch with a glass of wine before starting up the new week.
Oh, man. Well, hey, I got to ask you this, though, because for whatever reason, I don't know if this is just our part of the world or if this is all over the country, but Easter in Mississippi means that all, like, there's some sort of law that says that all men must wear bow ties.
Yeah.
And not even like of a certain age. Like the kids are wearing bow ties, the adults are wearing bow ties. I know you are one who likes to who pulls a bow tie from time to time.
Occasionally I rock a bow tie, yeah.
Today?
In college, I did not. I actually didn't wear a tie at all today.
Man. Oh,
yeah. I know.
John
yeah.
David Cole not yeah. wearing a tie on Easter.
And you know, the thing is, like, if you would have known me about 10 years ago, like, I was exclusively bow tie. And so that, you know, there's just a lot that's changed in my life since then. So, yeah.
All right. Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Well, you know, the great thing is that, you know, with us recording on a holiday, we were able to kind of talk about that fresh. And, I, you know, don't know where you guys are, but hopefully those of you who were able to join us on this holiday, maybe this means we're able to get a couple of new listeners live that may not be able to listen to otherwise. But I do want to tell you this. The reason why this podcast, this week's episode is possible is completely 120 gazillion percent because of those of you who
that's
are helping make this show happen. You know, that's why, you know, the fact that we now have you guys supporting this show, big shout out to the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club,
yes.
who's helping make this show happen,
mm-hmm.
means that even when scheduling conflicts go crazy, we still, you know, do our best to go above and beyond for you. And yeah, that means even on Easter, getting together and after our midday naps, come in looking fresh and talking some tobacco.
That's right. That's right.
But I do want to mention that because if you're not, I really do want to strongly encourage you to also join those who are helping make this show happen for even just a dollar an episode. If you go to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, become a patron. Those dollars go a long way to making sure that this content continues to come at you with quality and consistency. That surpasses all others, or at least that's our goal. Anyway.
That's right. That's so. Right. Man, so far we have 69 people participating with us on Patreon, and we're just very honored and, of course, moved by that. And we want you to know that that is a direct reason why we're able to continue to do this and get all the proper gear and have the quality, what it needs to be,
that's
and
right.
all that kind of stuff. So anyway, it's been a lot of fun, and we're glad to have you all on board with us.
All right, so, you know, we like to talk about, you know, some things that are very, what's the right word, timeless, right? Typically, we'll do a lot of shows where we talk about famous pipe smokers.
Yeah.
We talk about
yeah.
a lot of shapes and cuts. We obviously do
historical
pairings.
Stuff, pairings, yeah.
Exactly, a lot of the lore and legacy.
Different types of, leaves and blends and things of that nature.
On occasion, and a very rare occasion, but on occasion, there is news within the pipe world, within
yeah.
the tobacco industry, and specifically the corner in which we exist in, that is seismic enough that it really justifies an episode, because not only is it impactful, but because in and of itself, by being news, it is timeless. This is a moment in time.
That's right.
In which we would constantly look back at. Now, we've talked on this show before. I think we've even done, if not a few episodes, I know we've at least done one episode dedicated to Latakia.
That's right.
However, in the world of Latakia, things are changing because in the world we live in, things are changing. And in fact, well, John David, why don't you break the news here for those who may not be familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sure. And we'll just kind of back up a little bit.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
has been an ongoing process that folks have known about for, you know, that it's coming for, you know, several years now. We just kind of are seeing it play out more in real time right now. The rubber's kind of meeting the road, as it were. Anyway, Latakia, our favorite leaf, actually not my favorite leaf, but a very popular leaf
yeah.
amongst pipe smokers and of course, quite storied, is known to have come from Syria originally. Latakia actually, which I'm sure we mispronounce every time we say, is a port city on the Mediterranean in Syria. Of course, that's what the tobacco is named after. And so the Syrian Latakia that is so legendary is finally starting to exit the market.
Man.
And we're within the next probably 2 years, we'll see no more blends produced or sold in the entire world, actually, featuring Syrian Latakia. And so,
So we
knew this was coming. We knew that the hordes of Latakia that these companies and blenders had stockpiled was going to dwindle over the past several years. But the Syrian stock is finally now coming to its end. And so we wanted to mark that. We wanted to just kind of talk about it a little bit and also, pull the curtain back on, you know, what exactly is so special about Syrian Latakia? Why is it rare? Why is it going away? Why, you know, what's the alternatives and all that kind of stuff? So anyway, we thought we'd dive into some of that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So you mentioned, of course, that Latakia is a leaf that is blended so beautifully into so many different blends.
That's right.
And is also one that is beloved by many in the pipe tobacco community. Why is it? Why does Latakia, like, how, where does it fit in for, not you, obviously, because you're not a big fan of it. But, you know, I'm thinking very specifically of close friends of ours that almost exclusively smoke blends,
Latakia blends. Latakia, the Syrians have a term for it. If I try to pronounce it, I'm sure I would butcher it. But the term that they use for Latakia, it means the king of flavors. And so there's this concept in which, you know, you've got a leaf that's just incredibly different in the pipe world. A lot of leaves are, their intrigue is more nuanced, perhaps. But Latakia is so incredibly powerful and polarizing. It's this velvety, rich, strong. It's the loudest person in the room kind of thing, you know. And it's one of those that if you love it and you hate it, or you hate it, you respect it, you know.
That's good.
It's one of those things. Obviously, as a blender, we use a lot of it, and it's changed over time. The usages of Latakia, the amount that folks have used it, and with what, and in what proportions, and what blends, or what type of leaves can go with it, and is that acceptable or not? All these things have kind of evolved over time, but the lovely velvety smoky leaf that we know is very popular in its own right. And so let's talk a little bit about just the Syrian Latakia in general, and then what's happening here. Syrian Latakia, it's a leaf that it's actually, we've talked about this before on our previous Latakia episode, but there's a leaf. The Latakia is not the name of the plant. You're actually taking the tobacco leaf. I'm going to butcher the name. It's called the Shek El Bint, and it's a Syrian tobacco leaf, native, obviously, it's that northern Syria portion, closer to Turkey. And they take this leaf, they harvest it at, its kind of peak variety. This particular leaf has a kind of a strong amount of nicotine with it's a very robust flavor, strong nicotine. So it's one of those that is a more robust tobacco in its own right. They harvest it and then they actually sun dry it. And generally when they take these Shek El Bint leaves, they are actually sun drying them on the ground, like even just laying down. So imagine the, intense, Middle Eastern sun kind of beating down on these leaves, drying them out. And once they're dry, they are hung in these large barns, okay? And they're actually smoked for about 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. So think about, when you smoke something, even if you're smoking a turkey or something, the flavor of the turkey is being imparted from the smoke particles of, let's say, the mesquite wood or whatever, you're putting underneath that kind of thing. And so the Latakia is actually flavored the same exact way. So you've got these huge barns, and for nonstop for 15 weeks, these leaves are actually smoked. And the beauty of it is they are smoked by the local hardwoods native to northern Syria.
Oh, wow.
And so you're literally getting the flavor of that land imparted into the leaf that you're enjoying. So it's just this bizarre experience. They've got, things like pine and cedar, oak, and juniper are known to go on these fires that are, kind of smoldering underneath these, leaves for days.
All right, quick side note. Is that native to Syria?
A variety of it is.
Okay.
I don't know if it is entirely. Yeah, but a variety of it
Interesting.
Is.
Interesting. Okay, all right, cool. I didn't mean to derail. Yeah. I just
Great. Yeah. That's where all those flavors are coming from. These amazing plants, obviously, that are harvested you know, burned and then imparting those flavors into the Latakia leaves. And so and that's been going on for about 150 years now. So Latakia, as we've talked about before, was kind of accidentally discovered back in the mid-19th century. You know, they had like a fire and they forgot about these tobacco leaves at the end of the harvest season. And they just kind of got up there. And, you know, after the next year, they were like, well, this is kind of interesting. And found out how that, you know, just affected the flavor of the tobacco and all the different things. But around the turn of the 20th century, Latakia was really popular. It was exclusively grown in Syria at that point. It was really popular in pipe blends, but also to flavor Turkish cigarettes. So think about the early,
of course, yeah.
The early cigarettes, you know, before all the evil empire took over that industry. You know, you had a much more, you know, high quality, nuanced product, and these cigarettes would have Syrian Latakia in there to flavor and to spice it up. So as cigarettes in America got more heavily burley based and you know, kind of changed characteristics over time, eventually Latakia was kind of declined in its use in cigarettes in the mid 20th century. And at the same time, of course, you think about what you had in, you know, in the first 50 years of the 1900s, you had World War One and World War Two, both of which affected that part of the world, you know, very heavily.
Yeah.
And so Syria is known for not having a ton of arable land. And so they farmland in Syria was just very, it was just priceless. It was something that you had to have. And so in order to, you know, create more farmland, most of the woods that you know they had in Syria were actually destroyed to create more arable land so they could raise livestock or, you know, grow crops or something like that. Well, the problem with that was on the tobacco side is that all the, you know, the brush and the land, the trees, the forest, that was your source of the flavor for Latakia. And so as that started to dwindle over time, you know, you kind of had these competing interests, like the tobacco required the forest, but crops and livestock required, you know, pasture. And so they kind of had this
right,
give and take.
Right.
And eventually, just, you know, by the needs of the you know, the locals, you know, the pasture kind of won out. And so so production of Syrian Latakia actually completely ceased in 1960. And what's interesting is at that time you had all these companies that had just hoarded this stuff. Like, you know, think of, you know, you can kind of compare it to the embargo with Cuba, like when they stopped yeah. allowing Cuban cigars to come in right before, you know, you had the tales of President Kennedy, like, you know, sending his aides down to the, you know, shop to go, you know, stock up on, you know, Cohibas and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the same thing was happening. So these blenders had just hoarded this Syrian Latakia, and that those amounts of Latakia lasted even until the mid 1980s. And so think about for 20 years, it really the prime of some of the most storied blends in you know the pipe world. You know, think of all the Dunhill blends, Balkan Sobrani, you know, blends that featured this Syrian Latakia. You know, in their prime, they were actually using tobaccos that had been procured 10 and 20 years before that eventually ran out in the 1980s. So just really, really amazing. So, you know, you've got, think about, I love the comparison with the Syrian situation to the Cuban embargo, because just like what happened in Cuba, by law, the guys were, you know, kind of forced out of the country. And so you had all the expertise drain with that. You had all the, you know, the resources and the folks that could really invest in the newest technology and the best, you know, crop rotation and all this other stuff. When they left Cuba, they left, you know, for places like the Dominican Republic and eventually Nicaragua and Honduras. And so there was kind of this brain drain and resource drain from Cuba with the cigars. Well, the same thing happened in the Latakia world. And so when Latakia was forced to shut down by the government in 1960, all those folks either retired from the industry, found other things to do, or moved to Cyprus and started making Latakia in Cyprus.
Right,
and so
right,
Cyprus,
right, yeah.
Of course, is where we get the bulk of our Latakia today. And I love the difference there. You've got this Cypriot Latakia, Cyprus Latakia, you know, that has much more It's bolder. It's more in your face. It's richer. It's it got this extreme smoky component to it. If you use more than 10%, it all of a sudden starts to get real overwhelming and things of that nature. But the Syrian Latakia is much more nuanced. There's a tartness about it. It's floral. It obviously has the smoky, peaty flavors that are there, but there's just more going on, I think, on the sweeter end of the palate. It's kind of fascinating. So you've had all this resource that left Syria, went to Cyprus, and by the time the Syrians opened it back up for the Latakia to be produced again in their country, all the resources were kind of gone. They'd all moved on to other parts of the world and just weren't there anymore.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, with the understanding that you are John David Cole.
Yes, this fact.
All right. Is your palate attuned enough? All right. Well, let's say not you. Actually, let's say the average person. You put in Cyprus Latakia and Syrian Latakia in front of somebody.
Yeah.
They smoke both. Are they able to tell which one is? I mean, is it that stark of a difference?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
I think so. Okay. Now, if you start to look at blends that have different types in there, you might. If you're looking at one blend that's got, let's say, the 1970s Balkan Sobrani that had the, at the height of its, quality and all that other stuff, it had this Syrian Latakia in it. I think if you smoked a Cyprian Latakia at the same time, you would tell a big difference. But that's in a more pure form of it. I think those things, if you smoke straight Latakia, I think at the same time you would probably notice the difference. But it is much more nuanced when you start blending with the stuff.
You got
other things competing for flavors there. I think the more experienced smoker is going to be able to pick those things out. And not just someone like me that smokes all day every day for a living.
Right.
But folks that do enjoy tobacco. I think even those that don't necessarily enjoy Latakia blends as much, I think would be able to pick out some of the differences there.
But
So it's interesting. You'll have people that they'll say, I really like that McClelland, Wilderness tobacco, or I don't know, for some reason I like the Three Oaks Syrian tobacco. It's really good. And then turn around, oh, you must like English blends. And then those same people are like, well, I don't know. I don't really care for, a Dunhill Nightcap or, Throgmorton cellar or something like that. And so what you'll start to notice is the blends they do like that have Latakia in them are actually blends that feature Syrian Latakia. It's kind of this fascinating thing. And so anyway, I think there are some things to pay attention to there.
All right. So if I'm following the narrative correctly, so the Syrian government opened back up for Latakia
production,
to be
right.
produced. However,
right.
the infrastructure wasn't there to support it.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Was there who's our boy down in New Orleans who basically is Perique?
Yeah, Mark Ryan.
Is there a Mark Ryan of Syria?
Well, so what happened is once they opened it back up in Syria. Of course, this was almost like around 1990. So we're still talking over 20 years ago now. Gosh, almost 30.
That was yeah, it was.
That's crazy.
We're getting old,
yeah. Bro. It's terrifying. But by the time it was opened back up, all the infrastructure, you said it perfectly, had kind of moved on to Cyprus. And in Cyprus, they use a different leaf. It's called the yellow Cyprus tobacco. It's similar to the Izmir leaf that we blend with, a Turkish leaf that's really great. It's a different leaf than the leaf they're using in Syria. And then also they're using local Cyprian woods to smoke the tobacco with. Using different, it'd be like you smoking with mesquite and then smoking with hickory. They're both smoked and they're both going to have kind of that campfire flavor, but they're different woods.
Yeah, you're
going to
get some good barbecue, but it's going to taste completely
different. Yeah, it's just going to taste different. Yeah. That's right. And so same thing with Syrian and Cyprian Latakia. You're just using different products. And so even though the process is the same, you're going to get a different flavor. The ones in Cyprus are more myrtle trees, cedar trees, cypress trees, just imparting different flavors. And so once the moratorium was lifted in Syria, they had they tried to get this off the ground and eventually realized all the expertise wasn't really there anymore. And around 2000, all the There was a huge batch of, you know, finally all this Syrian Latakia that they were able to come out with. Okay, so you had these guys that were trying to, you know, kind of get it going. And they had this huge, huge batch that came out. And all that went to market in the early 2000s. And that was the last Syrian Latakia that was ever distributed on the market. Ever.
93.
No, that was by that time it was right after 2000.
Right after 2000.
That's right. Okay. And so that was the last Syrian Latakia that ever had been basically put onto the market.
Y2K.
And so it's a I know, right? I know.
We were all wondering, waiting for the shoe to drop on Y2K. It did.
And it did. It just, you know, not how we thought. Yeah. But you know, so you had the major players. Think of the major players at the time. You had you know, folks like Mac Barron, and then in the States here, you had people like McClellan Tobacco, which we know and love, and the Cornell and Deal folks, which also produce GL Peace tobacco as well, our good friend Greg Peace. And so these folks, they had these huge hoard stockpiles of Syrian Latakia that they had sitting back. And you know, we always knew that it was going to be a limited thing. That's the deal. Like they, you know, at this point in time, this was even before the war that is currently going on in Syria. You know, we just knew the stability of that in agriculture of that nature in Syria was just probably not ever going to come back. And
right, yeah.
All the resources had left. And, you know, the market for Latakia isn't what it used to be because Latakia is not used really in cigarettes anymore. And so the need for Syrian Latakia just kind of evaporated over time as they pushed the growers out of the country. And so you've got, you know, these people, they were like, okay, well, this is the last Syrian Latakia that's probably ever going to be produced. Let's dive in. And so they bought literally as much as they could. And we're talking just enough Latakia to get through, you know, two decades kind of. I mean, we're talking like a bunch of Latakia. It hit the market at all the same time. And so for the past almost 15 years, you know, not quite 20 years, you've had these amazing blends that have featured Syrian Latakia, but the clock has kind of been ticking on them. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
The clock's been ticking. You've got folks, you know, like we mentioned Greg Peace. He came out with some amazing blends. The folks at Cornell and Deal, McClellan and Mac Barron, both. We'll talk about some of their blends in a bit. But the clock was always ticking. You know, they were like, okay, we're going to use this as much as we can, but once it's gone, it's gone. And, you know, amazingly enough, in 2004, what are the chances of something as tragic of like this would happen? But in 2004, the warehouse where Cornell and Deal had actually kept all of its Syrian Latakia, the warehouse actually burned to the ground.
What?
And so in 2004, all of a sudden you had these huge players that had stockpiled, you know, this precious Syrian Latakia, and all of a sudden, you know, GL Peace and Cornell and Deal overnight lost its entire, you know, its entire bid. And
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine how good that fire smelled like three states away?
I'm sure. It's
unless you don't like English blends.
Well,
it's just really tragic, you know. And so you know, the few precious blends that those great blenders were making at the time, you know, they immediately disappeared from the market. And kind of what is bringing us, you know, to talk about this now is that McClellan, you know, let's fast forward now 13 years, and McClellan has just run out of its Syrian Latakia. And what's interesting is they actually just went through a move. And so their headquarters moved, you know, kind of to another side of Kansas City. And they actually were kind of surprised that their Latakia ran out when it did. They thought they had more, but because of a stock error in some of their move, and there was just some miscommunication, they actually found out that they had a lot less in a very short period of time. And so some of those great McClellan blends that we've all kind of know and love, the Three Oaks Syrian, Throgmorton Across the Pond, the Super Syrian, Super Balkan, and just some of these great blends that McClellan had made, all of a sudden, over the past literally 2 months, as we're sitting here recording, they have disappeared.
Man.
They're gone. And if you can find them, you better buy them and you better put them back. We had a
Russ.
I know, right? Yeah. I'm sure our friend Russ Hicks is
Sitting back counting his money,
salivating. Yeah, I'm sure he's already stocked up some. But you know, we've had folks that have come by the shop and you know, the you know, blends that just feature these delicate, you know, precious Syrian leaves are you know, will be no longer created. I called you know, McClellan the day after I heard this, that this was kind of on the rumor mill, and spoke with Mary you know, McNeil, who owns McClellan. And
yeah, of course,
she was you know, just you know, very upfront, and you know, John David, I'm sorry, but you'll never get Throgmorton across the pond again, ever again, like never. It's just so tragic,
man.
And so we, the only,
what other blends are impacted? I need to, like
that's right. I mean, there's you know, it's a small number of blends, but it's a, you know, they're very important.
That's
blends.
Every blend is somebody's favorite.
That's right.
Every blend.
That's a great point. It's you know, we have all these blends. Cornell and Deal has, like, you know, 1,800 blend, not mm-hmm. that many, but they have a ton of blends. You know, it's like every one of those blends, you're right, is probably someone's favorite.
Exactly.
So to someone, you know, this is a tragedy. It's Throgmorton across the pond, for instance. I cannot tell you how many times I recommended that particular blend to smokers that wanted to try an English blend for the first time. You know, these are aromatic smokers. They wanted something that, you know, it would kind of give them the idea of what Latakia was like, but, you know, I didn't want to just punch them in the face with the stuff. You know, I didn't want to, you know, throw them over the edge. You know,
yeah,
I wanted
throw them to the deep end.
You know, and Throgmorton across the pond was so good. It is so good. It's one of those, the Syrian Latakia in there. It's very soft. It's got these floral notes. It's paired with just a really generous portion of black Cavendish. And so it's super smooth and creamy. And it's just, you know, one of those English style blends that, that an aromatic smoker, it's kind of like taking those first couple steps in the deep end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it's gone. And so,
well, so is the deep end.
And so is the whole deep end. That's right.
that's the tragedy. Yeah.
So anyway, you've got, you know, a few other, blenders that have a little bit of this Syrian Latakia left, but, by the folks, at MacBaren, who currently produce, the vintage Syrian, they anticipate that their last shipment of this stuff will go out this time next year. Mm. So in 1 year, they'll probably produce their last shipment, and then that'll be it. So yeah, we just wanted to talk about that.
Do you have any?
It's really,
do you have any?
I may or may not. Yeah, I have some. Yeah, not a bunch.
You know. All right.
You think I ought to put it back and, like, try
well,
to sell it?
Not, I say definitely put it back. But no, you know what I'm thinking of right now is. Oh, this is going to be delicate to talk about on air. Maybe this is dangerous to even try. You and I, we both have a friend who is a genius, an artist, someone who has created some amazing things in the pipe world.
That's right.
And who has invented something that is yet to be released upon the pipe world. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I actually don't, but I'm going to run with you.
Well, all right, so it involves,
I'm going to pretend really well.
It involves immortalizing tobacco. In a decorative fashion.
Okay, I'm with you now.
All right, you with me now?
Yep.
I think there might be an opportunity there.
Ooh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying now?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So I'm gonna leave that out
just
there.
Just leave that as a
in case he's listening, because
right.
he probably has picked up now. Or not. He may not know that we're talking about him as he's actively listening to us. So it could go either way. And in which case, if you do know it and you realize we're talking about you, I'm sorry, man. You know, I love you. Anyway.
These are just ideas.
Just a thought. All right, you know, but it is crazy that we're now, so really the impact, you know, it's like delayed death, right? It's like you cut off the rose, but the rose still looks beautiful and still there, even though technically it is dead and the source of what is fueling it has been gone. It's interesting that we feel the impacts now in the midst of, you know, what has even happened recently with Syria. Because, you know,
what a great point. Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and just, I'll restate this because we said this earlier this year and I'll, I guess it was late last year, but one way or the other, on this show, we don't talk politics. That's not something that we do.
Yeah, we just kind of keep our hands off that.
Yeah, but you know, real world circumstances with what's going on in Syria, you know, I immediately when you were talking about the fact that it was no longer available, I immediately thought it was directly related.
You associated to the war.
To the war.
Right.
And especially, and, you know, the international relationships there. Yeah.
And we've even had, you know, customers that have asked things like, you know, look, if I buy tobacco that has Latakia in it, am I supporting in some way the regime
over there?
Yeah, stuff like that. And so you kind of have to walk through and explain, well, you know, this Latakia, if you are smoking Syrian Latakia, it was... you know, it was harvested over 10 years ago kind of thing. You know, it's, you know, people just have to be educated on it, but, yeah, it's
try to educate yourself on the Syrian war. I mean, like literally, like it is a mess.
It is so complicated
in terms of like looking at like just the different, like, you know, organizations involved and then how things have changed hats. It really is.
Yep.
It is what a modern civil war looks like in the age of instant information.
Yeah.
And it's especially with just kind of the, you know, the kind of, I mean, I hesitate to even say the quote unquote cleanliness of kind of a civil war when you had, oh, this side versus this side.
Right.
It's North versus South.
You're either red or blue or black or white.
Right.
And it just happened.
But then
now it's just
a cascade
of
organizations.
It's way too convoluted.
It's crazy. Yeah. But anyway.
And that's what, you know, people are like, well, maybe it'll come back someday. And, you know, the optimist in me is very small when it comes to Syria and Latakia.
Hey, for the people of Syria, I hope that that things get stable enough and the infrastructure comes back. And
that's right. That's right. The last thing we really need to worry about is a tobacco plant over there. As much as we do love it, there's
exactly
all the things going on there. But it is worth marking, and we did want to talk about that Syria and Latakia. Of course, Syria, the birthplace of Latakia, that northern portion of the country with all those incredible local, you know, plants that impart that really special flavor that we've known now for over 150 years. We're bringing that era to an end, and so many of our favorite Syrian Latakia blends have just left the market, and next year we'll see a few more. So,
well, I will
pretty interesting.
At one day and age, I do hope and think of a future where at some point blends will be back on the market of all nations, and when that day comes, we will need to send somebody across all countries and continents to go out and get the tobacco to bring it home. And that person is going to have the skills of a diplomat, which means they will need to be smoking the diplomat pipe from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, you tried so hard to make that work.
I climbed
and in some sense, you did.
A little bit. Stuck the landing.
Man, we do, as you know, love our friends at Missouri Meerschaum. And for folks that do want to try new tobacco blends or maybe component leaves by themselves, just to get a good idea of what these blends taste like or the leaves, we always recommend Missouri Meerschaum pipes, just because they're going to provide you with a clean smoke that you know is quite pure in flavor, and you're also buying a brand new pipe that's at a very reasonable price. And so the Diplomat pipe from Missouri Meerschaum is great. It comes in a straight and a bent variety. Is it a small kind of apple shape? As well as a taller billiard shape.
I almost feel like they should call it the politician because it looks so different depending on
which one are you going to look at.
Exactly. So yeah, the Diplomat's one of the most popular designs, a larger bowl, filtered pipe. They've got the oval shaped, which is apple, and then also kind of a tall cylindrical style as well. I'm a big fan. Look, I'm apple pipes in general, just that style, that shape, I think is so beautiful.
They're nice. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is the Diplomat of my choice. But hey, if you've got a Diplomat pipe from Missouri Meerschaum, smoke it this week, take a picture of it. We love to retweet those out when y'all send them in. It's a great way to let the good folks over at Missouri Meerschaum know that you help, you thank them for supporting this show, as we do as well. So again, that's the Diplomat pipe from Missouri Meerschaum.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, pipe question of the week this week comes in from Ed Dupree.
Ed, love Ed.
We love Ed.
Yeah.
All right, so this is great, man. This is kind of a personal question.
Okay.
All right, he says, what is something that you do now with years of experience smoking that you wish you had known when you first started? All right, now, John David, take him back. Mm. How old were you when you legally started smoking a pipe?
When I legally started smoking a pipe, I was 18. I did wait until I was 18, but I was 18. We've talked about this before. You know, I had friends that were smoking cigarettes, and of course, I was kind of a pompous nerd that had to show them up and be a little different. And I immediately went to the pipe. And I think there was a lot I didn't know. I've probably got like a 1A. And a 1B on this. I'm going to say both.
Okay,
and
both
involve tamping. Okay. So I
didn't know how to tamp that ash.
I didn't know how to tamp that ash. And tamping that ash is so critically important.
It takes practice.
It takes a lot of practice. And so all seriousness, people probably think, especially if they come in the store, I'm just a complete broken record because I'm always telling folks you've got to tamp your pipe. That's the only way you're going to be able to keep it lit for an extended period of time. And so first off, I think, I wish I would have known that up front. I wish, there was just no one at Walgreens to tell me, hey, you need this little goofy looking tool, this fake nail thing.
Wait, they didn't give you a nail?
You're at Walgreens. And so they just want to sell you that, a greeting card, maybe some Snickers and cheap beer, and then get you out the door.
Quick soapbox here. In this day and age, and I get it was a different time.
It wasn't this day and age.
In this day and age, I hope that your first, you dear listener who's listening because of your interest.
That's right.
Don't go to Walgreens for your first pipe experience.
That's
please,
right.
Please.
That's right.
Come down to Jackson.
We're begging you.
Take care of you.
The delinquents are now in charge of the asylum, and we'll take great care of you.
Yeah. Great.
Man, I just didn't know about tamping, and so I think I think tamping is the first thing, and then as kind of a that's 1A. I think 1B would be once I kind of figured that out, I didn't really know how to do it and when to do it, and when I'm tamping my pipe, I so often find that it's helpful to tamp my pipe while I'm puffing on it, and I tell folks that all the time. It's like just kind of use that is a mental tool to think, okay, what's happening in that bowl while you're tamping the ash? You're stoking up that fire. Imagine a campfire with a nice gust of wind blowing through it, and you're kind of moving the logs around at the same time to get the get the embers to light pieces of the fire that aren't lit, but or maybe were lit but aren't lit anymore, and this kind of thing. And so you kind of have to mentally you know, imagine the inside of your bowl along those same lines. And so, you know, I think puffing while I'm tamping my pipe has helped me tremendously over the years. And so, I'll just submit those two things. I think both those are important to me. And, you know, if you keep your pipe lit, I'm convinced you're going to just enjoy the experience more because you won't have to relight it over and over. And therefore, your tongue will not get as burned as it could be. And so I'm just such a stickler on helping people get their pipe lit and keeping it lit. And so that tamping is really important.
You know, I would not have thought about that, but for me, it's kind of the same, although I've got another one.
Yeah.
Especially like for long smoke competitions, completely changed my game once I got tamping down. I hesitate to say how old I was last year when you told that to me, two years ago. But one way or the other, that was not, it was later in the game. I think for me, man, this is more of, it's less about like a skill and more about a mindset.
Yeah.
And that's just to enjoy it and to not be upset if you do have to relight several times over.
Yeah, kind of giving yourself a break.
Yeah, because that was the thing. I remember I got into pipes and pipe tobacco at a very stressful time. Thinking back on that era now, and I say stressful.
I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah,
you thought that was stressful.
Exactly. but at the time, you know, I was like, it was a stressful period of time in my life, and I was kind of looking for kind of relaxation processes, something to incorporate,
right.
You know, I wanted to be something tactile, something not video games, just something I could do. And so I went to watercolors and I went to pipe tobacco. And so I went in and I had a terrible first pipe experience, I had a terrible second pipe experience, but one way or the other, I ended up owning these two pipes and tobaccos. And I got so frustrated as I, you know, kept on trying to light it, or I did light it, but then I have to light it like six or seven times, and I thought I was failing. And that's not failing. That's just part of the process.
Yeah, sure thing.
And so I wish that I had known then not to be so frustrated with myself, because I put down the pipe for a good couple of years because of me constantly feeling almost self-conscious about the way that I was smoking my pipe.
I think a lot of people do. I hear constantly people coming back in. They're like, well, you know, it's cooler weather, and I thought about picking the pipe back up. And then they'll say something like, you know, I used to smoke a pipe, but, you know, I just kind of gave it up. I never really got the hang of it. I never really figured it out. And I don't know. And then that's when we have the conversation. I'm like, hey, do you have 5 minutes? Can you walk over to the tobacco bar with me, and let me just, you know, load my bowl up with you and kind of, you know, show you how to do it. And that's, I think, when the experience changes for people.
Do you have 5 minutes for me to tell you about John David Cole and how he's my personal tobacconist?
That's so terrible.
Sorry. When you said that, it just sounded too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's our experiences, Ed. Great thoughts.
Really, you know, good question. Yeah.
I think I'm going to post this one up on Facebook and get you guys' thoughts. Let's get a conversation going about that. I'd love to know what some of those of you who've been smoking your pipe for years.
Episode on that.
I mean, seriously.
I mean, really.
That might be a good one. I'm curious to hear what the feedback is. And as you kind of post those thoughts, remember that we've got a lot of newbies that are kind of looking at, you know, coming to Country Square Radio for that exact same type of question and experience. And so,
yeah, some of our biggest downloaded episodes, actually, Bo, if I'm not mistaken, are those 101 episodes.
That's right,
the, you know, the ones where we revisit things like, you know, how to pack your pipe, or how to light your pipe, or, you know, what is the difference between an aromatic tobacco, non-aromatic, or whatever. And so anyway, yeah, that could be really helpful if y'all would chime in on that kind of thing.
That's right.
Quick fire with the Squire.
Quick fire questions. Alrighty, man. We got some quick fire questions in from the good folks at thispipelife.com. This one is coming in from J. Curtis Goodwin.
Good.
Good wine?
Good one.
Good win. Well, it's, but there's an E after it.
I think it's good one.
Jay Curtis says, all right, here we go. Are you ready?
Bring it.
All right. So he's got this very much styled as a would you rather.
Okay.
Would you rather be the funniest person in the room or the most intelligent?
I think the most intelligent. I appreciate it when other people are the funniest person in the room. I really do. Because I don't know. I like the process of laughing and not having to come up with a joke.
That's good.
I'd rather be the most intelligent.
Well, you know, in terms of having to choose, because often I find that I qualify as both. No, that's not, not in the slightest. I think I'm going to go with you, because if you're the most intelligent, you can also be the funniest, just no one else knows it.
Ah, but you know it.
Exactly. And I kind of find myself, I don't think that I fall into the intelligent. This is more of just I'm a jerk. But like I will make jokes that I think are hilarious and nobody else does. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like the laughter is going on up here. And it makes me very socially awkward in a lot of situations. I do like being the funniest person in the room. You know, I told you I was going to go to open mic night.
Yeah.
This last, I ended up not going up on mic because I was late. But at some point,
to the benefit of all the people that were there.
Come on, man. I was going to be
great.
You're
quick on your toes. I could see it. Yeah.
I think I could have come up with something pretty good. But I was looking forward to it. I have done an open mic night before, although it was, did I tell you about that?
Yeah, you have.
Okay, all right. So, but that, even that wasn't necessarily a full-on stand-up comedy. I do have it on my bucket list to be the funniest person in the room in a stand-up comedic. But anyway, yes, clearly I'm not the most intelligent person in this room, but I wish I was. All right, would you rather win $50,000 or let your best friend win $500,000?
Golly, that's just, I almost feel like this is with, you know, showing a dark side of my heart, but man, show me the money.
$50,000 isn't that
much. I could do a lot with $50,000.
It's not that much money.
I know it's not in today's world, well, but I mean, still, I can do a lot with that. I could invest that quite wisely and do something. Look, Bo, I would love for you to win $500,000 if you gave me $50,000 of it.
Okay. That, done and deal.
Okay, deal.
That'll work right there. No, I, you know, that's the thing. Like, it's funny because, you know, right now I'm raising for my other company, for Satchel. And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm like, you know, these big chunks of money, like for example, like literally $50,000, I'm looking at that and that's not a small amount of money, but like compared to what we need, it's a small amount of money. So it's like all
in
of a sudden.
In today's world, it, you know, if you're talking big picture, it, yeah.
Numbers end up becoming like very relative.
Yep.
But no, I would definitely rather have my best friend win $500,000.
Well, you're a better person than I am. So good for you.
Well, I'm
Is
assuming.
Is it lonely up there on your high horse?
No. Let me explain my selfish reasoning. I'm assuming that my best friend is going to hook me up from time to time. They'll take on all the liability of owning the yacht. I just get to borrow the yacht.
You're the guy that shows up with the beer. Yeah.
Yes, I am. and the scotch, man.
Can I bring anything? Yeah.
So yes, there you go. All right, and then finally he says, would you rather have free Wi-Fi wherever you go or have free coffee wherever and whenever you want?
Golly, I think I'm gonna go with coffee.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with coffee. I think I'll go with coffee.
Interesting.
I can do without. I'm trying to divorce myself from Wi-Fi a little bit of late. So I'm gonna go with the coffee. Yeah.
I'm looking at you with your wireless computer.
I don't want to. Yeah, you don't have to bring up all that.
Okay.
I'm just trying. You know, when I, you know, leave work and go home, I'm just trying to put it aside.
No, all right.
But I do appreciate the coffee.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I need the caveat here. Does the free coffee, because he specifies whenever and wherever, does that mean literally I could say I want coffee and it magically appears in my hand?
Yeah, I think so.
Because that means now I have superpowers.
Yeah.
Think about it. I could conjure up coffee, hot coffee. I would assume it's hot coffee anytime.
Well,
that
maybe
I
you could
to.
Conjure up Wi-Fi too.
Well, but that's less effective. You know what I mean? Like if I could actually fight bad guys and throw hot coffee
with
on
coffee.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'd sue me like I'm McDonald's.
Yeah.
But it'd be awesome.
No, that's true.
I'd be coffee man. I would wear a burlap sack as my cape.
Fortunately, you have plenty of them.
I think this could be something.
So you're a big coffee man?
And no, I would definitely take the Wi-Fi wherever.
Okay.
I like the ability to connect no matter where I am.
Good.
All right. Great quick fire questions in from Jay Curtis Goodwin. And of course, that is his username. And I think actually his actual name, because I think I know exactly who this is.
Right.
And they are over at the good place that is the online community that is thispipelife.com.
That's right.
Now, thispipelife.com, an amazing online community, very, very interactive, very beautiful, but also have a great forums over there. And over on the forums, that's where we've got our quick fire questions line where a lot of people are submitting these things. Now, you know, one of the things I love about their website, like I mentioned before, is just how visual it is. And John David, you got an eye for pictures and photography and such. I mean, like, would you say, I mean, you know, with your design flair eye, how would you?
I just got a promotion.
how would you describe this pipelife.com?
Yeah, it's just very visually appealing. They're always looking for the next angle when it comes to, you know, just interesting ways to portray, you know, the tobacco culture that we find ourselves in. And so whether it's, you know, folks gathered around a campfire smoking their pipes, or maybe a beautiful collection of pipes just kind of laid out on a nice wooden deck, you know, they've got the folks behind the camera are just really thoughtful, I think, when, you know, trying to tackle this kind of thing. And of course, they're picking up also on the best pictures that are coming from their community. And so a lot of times you can actually find your photo featured on thispipelife.com. They're, you know, the incredible stuff that you can draw from through the forums there is also quite rewarding, particularly if you're a newer pipe smoker and need some help getting started or have some questions. There's just a lot of resources there for you. So we definitely point you to thispipelife.com. When you do, you'll have to sign up to get in, but it is absolutely free. And you use the code CSR when you sign up. And that helps the folks at thispipelife.com know that you heard about us, heard about them through us, and it helps us out too.
Yeah, that's right. Thispipelife.com. Use the code CSR when you register at thispipelife.com. I wonder if that also, if you could I get coffee and sugar and such in my coffee? Because then could I just conjure also sugar and...
Sugar and cream.
Steamed milk. Go!
Half and half. Bam.
It'd be amazing.
We have a really lame new comic book character.
Your thoughts, your comments. Listener feedback.
Listener feedback this week. We got some great listener feedback. Actually, this is in reference specifically to last week's episode.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about beaches. Charles Hibbs, he writes in, he says, I'm from Kansas and we get a fair amount of wind. I love my wind caps, but not only for blocking the wind, but they also hold my prepackaged tobacco.
That's right, in the pipe.
Also, I use cobs at work, especially the acorn.
Right. That acorn devil ants that Missouri Meerschaum came out with, really, really good looking pipe. And we did talk about that kind of, you know, preloading your pipe to go to the beach.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Charles, he's preloading his pipe and then he's putting the wind cap on there to keep the bowl ready for him. You know, he can put it in his pocket, throw it in his bag, and not have to worry about the tobacco getting anywhere, which is really nice. So, man, our friend Roberto, all the way from Italy, who made a Country Squire pilgrimage, pipe pilgrimage, I guess, almost not quite a year ago now.
Man.
But Roberto, he asked, what are your favorite beaches there in Mississippi? He says Gulfport or Biloxi. All right, Roberto, Bo's laughing. Let me give you like just a short geography lesson. Okay, so there are technically beaches in the state of Mississippi.
Very technically.
Right. I mean, by textbook definition. But the problem is there's about 5 miles off the coast of Mississippi's Gulf Coast, down in the Gulf of Mexico, there's an island. And that island, it's called Ship Island. It creates a sound, the body of water called a sound. So you've got, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, this island, the Mississippi Sound, and then Gulfport and Biloxi.
Mm.
And the problem is that island that's out there, it doesn't allow the water close to the beach, close to the main shore, to get cleaned out. And so the beach in the Mississippi Gulf Coast is really muddy, swampy, you know, it's just not that beautiful.
I mean, like,
we love Gulfport and Biloxi. I mean, particularly, there's some really historic places down there. It's kind of interesting. Jefferson Davis's home is actually in Biloxi. You can go. It's called I've forgotten it, but Beauvoir. You can go tour Beauvoir, and there's lots of gaming industry down there. So you go to these beautiful casinos that they spent hundreds of millions of dollars to do. Really, you know, interesting places to eat, great seafood, all that. But the beaches aren't pretty because of that Mississippi Sound. That sound, because of that island, it doesn't let the Gulf water kind of clean it out. So it's just not too pretty.
Yeah, I don't want to hate on Biloxi. Actually, our producer Mike, he's actually in the process.
Oh, we love Biloxi.
He's moving to Biloxi right now.
Yeah,
so
no, absolutely.
Really,
it's just, and the locals there also know, like, well, you know, it's beautiful down there. It's just you don't necessarily get in the water.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. So back to the original question: what is your favorite beaches there in Mississippi, Gulfport, Biloxi? The answer is hard pass.
Yeah,
hard pass.
Hard pass. That's right.
I'm going to Dolphin Island in about
yeah,
a month.
Yeah, you know, you just work your way over to the east a little bit.
Yeah, so that's what you do. We also, man, we've been getting some great tweets in for those of you who are joining us live.
These are great. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a smaller crowd tonight, but loving getting your feedback. Man, Kurt, you've got the most amazing porch setup right now. I got some family around. He's got his shoes off, kicked back, got the sunset in the background.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
He's playing the podcast in the background as I close out Easter with my family. Life is good. Well, hey, everybody. Hey, Kurt's family. How y'all doing? Hope y'all are doing good.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for letting us be a part of your Sunday evening. Man, Mark VV apparently also has a Michael Jordan mug. Which is staring us in the eye with some Boodles and tonic. And so, man, Mark, we're just on the same page, man. I mean, we're just on the same page.
Now, Mark is one of your fans. I bet Mark VV, he's done the full seersucker bow tie, John David beard. That's what I'm saying. They cosplay.
I'm a Mark fan. I'm a huge Mark fan. Yeah, this goes both ways now. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
Man, Greg tweets in. He asks if Bo has shaved again, or is that his 10-year-old son?
Yeah.
And yes, Bo has shaved again, and we talked about his regrets of doing that, but. Anyway, I told Bo, the part of the reason I don't grow I don't shave my face is because I don't have that jawline anymore that I used to have. You know, my neck just kind of goes right up into my chin. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
so
no,
my
I got
beard,
you,
you know, and I don't know, Bo, maybe you ought to think about that too.
Look, as I was telling you, I'll tell you guys, as I told John David, I've got this very important meeting tomorrow. And so I wanted to put my best foot forward. I shaved, I looked in the mirror and realized I did not do that. So
yeah, there you go.
It is just is
best foot
it
forward.
Is.
Well, you know, when you grow a beard, it also saves that delicious pipe tobacco flavor.
Yeah, that's
later.
True. Yeah. That is true. All right, and then also Varge, he says, for him, the importance of. Let's see.
When he was talking, we were talking about Ed's question, something that you wish you would have known when you first started smoking a pipe, and Varge comes back and says he would have known about the importance of drying time. Drying time. Think about these moist tobaccos, not just aromatics, but particularly some of the pressed Virginias and Periques, things of that nature. A lot of these tobaccos are just really, really wet, and there's some brands that are notorious for that. I think of all the Samuel Gaywith stuff, Gaywith and Hogarth. These brands are just real, they come out of the tin just real moist, and so, you know, you tear them apart, let them sit there and dry, just kind of air out some, and sometimes even multiple days, and it can make your experience just a lot more enjoyable. Great point, Varge.
Well, good show tonight, man. A lot of things that are going on, some sad news in terms of the industry. I'm actually, right now, as we're in the Podastery studio, right next door is my office. I've moved my cellar to my office, so I am going to have you just do a quick look before we leave, just to make sure.
Or just pick out anything that might need to sit back a little bit.
Yeah, no, I just need to know what I need to like put in the bank. You know what I mean?
That's right.
This may not exist in a couple of years, but one way or the other, man, I appreciate your knowledge, kind of educating us a little bit about the history of how we got to this point, and yeah, man, I think it was a great. Always great to sit down and get a history lesson from Professor John David. Well, hey, we always love also getting you guys' feedback. Thank y'all so much for writing in the YouTube comments, the Facebook posts, the emails. Those are so wonderful. We also really appreciate it, by the way, if you head over to iTunes and write us a review. It's a great way to help the show without spending a dime. However, if you are willing to help this show by spending a dime, in fact, a couple of
or
dimes.
Or 10 dimes, right?
That's right. Become a patron for as little as a dollar an episode. By doing so, you get some extra benefits as well, by the way. If you become a patron for just a dollar an episode, you get the full archive of episodes dating back almost 200 episodes, and that can be yours. We also have club membership for those of you doing $3 to $5 an episode. Learn more by going to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, or we make it simple. Just click the Become a Patron button that's right there on the Satchel Podcast Player, which is definitely how you should be listening to the show on the Satchel Podcast Player for your iPhone or Android. Y'all, you can keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at TheRealBoYork.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at @_CountrySquire.
And then, of course, all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com, where you can tune in live. And yes, next week we will be back to the normal time at the normal location.
Monday night.
That's 8:30 Central Time, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. We'd love to have you join us at countrysquareradio.com. Well, man, it has been a beautiful Easter. And
quite a treat, man.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. This is the first Easter that you and I have spent some time together. And I got to tell you.
That's right.
It has been a pleasure, right. Sir.
Absolutely. Quite the same. Happy Easter, bud.
Happy Easter to you. Let's go have a night.
See you, brother.
Listening to Country Squire Radio, a member of the Podastery Network. For more information on this and other shows, please visit podastery.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.